This October, I'll be 44 years old. 4-4. The number 4 is considered a very unlucky number in Asian cultures. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, and that's because the word for 4 is the same as the word for death. And so if you travel to Korea or Japan and you get on an elevator, you may notice that the number 4 is missing from the elevator buttons. And when manufacturers name their product series, like TVs or camcorders, they'll go from G2, G3, G5. Now, I'm not that superstitious, and yet, this birthday does give me cause to pause and ask myself to reflect about what it means to be old, and especially what it means to grow old, to age well. 44, I hope, is the middle of my life. I hope I will see my 80th birthday, my 90th birthday. When Preston's sister visited him while he was living in Japan, she was particularly struck by the elderly Japanese ladies there, their faces and their bodies all wrinkled with age. She affectionately referred to them as the Honorable Raisinettes. I have honorable raisinettes in my family. My eldest aunt is 90. I hitchhiked with her through the Korean countryside about 5 years ago. She's tiny, but she has a fierce spirit that comes out in her speech. She will say anything to anyone, but you can clearly tell that it comes out of a place of caring and love. She is so clearly in her element as the eldest member of my mother's family. During most of my childhood, there was always a grandmother living in the household, whether it was my mother's mother in Korea or my father's mother in America. To my young eyes, my paternal grandmother, the one who lived with us in Ohio, was always old, had always been old. Her back was bent. Her hands seemed to be just bones and big knuckles. And her skin was so thin that one day the handle on our screen door pierced through her skin. I was about 9 or 10, and I was so startled I couldn't move. But she was very calm and seemed to be almost detached from her body. Without ever thinking about it, I knew that one day I would be just like her, all wrinkled up and hunched over, an honorable raisinette. And I hold that image with a lot of affection and not very much fear. Thanks to my connection with congregations, I have known and I do know lots and lots of people who are in their 80s and 90s. They write poetry, they fall in love, they serve the needy, they heal the troubled heart. And they hold for me a picture of where I am headed. These days we see images of older people doing all kinds of things that used to be solely the domain of the young. In the Senior Olympics, we read about people like David Ward, a 91-year-old cyclist who won the gold medal last year in the 90 to 94 age division. You hear stories all the time about people going back to school and even getting their PhDs in their 70s and 80s. Yesterday on the radio, I heard David Honeyboy Edwards, live, not a recording, at 93, this Mississippi Delta blues man sang and played like he was a 60-year-old. And do you remember George Burns? George Burns, he started a brand new phase of his comedy career when he was 80 years old and performed for almost 20 years after that. Seeing all of this buoys my optimism about having an active, active life in my old age. Now, I know it's not written down anywhere that I'm going to win any Olympic gold medals in my 90s. So I need to start coming to terms with old age now, so I can live that kind of life that will enable me to be open enough to receive whatever life has to give me at that time. Now, the first thing I need to do, I think, when it comes to dealing with aging is to get rid of some of the romanticized versions of it. I wonder if you noticed that all of the descriptions I held up, George Burns and Honey Boy Edwards and my elder aunt, all had kind of a rosy tint to them. Our romantic notions about old age are a veneer laid over our fear of aging and of dying. Most of the mass media images of elders are not examples of how to age well or even how to live well in old age, but rather how to resist it, how to hang on to some piece of youthfulness until the very, very end. To see what old age really has to offer us, we have to throw away those rose-colored glasses. Those images of the senior Olympiads can be positive and affirming of all the capabilities of the older in their later years. And at the same time, they show only one side, one romantic side of the realities of aging. We see very, very few mass media images of people who are facing diminishment in their later years. They are out of sight and out of mind. Another romanticism is this popular notion that the Confucian heritage in Asian societies, which emphasizes the veneration of elders, means that elders are taken care of by their families and held in high regard in those countries. But Confucius has been dead for thousands of years, and the high priests now are CEOs and pop stars. In Japan, where 20% of the population is over the age of 65, the number of elders living by themselves, and especially living in poverty, has risen dramatically. One 75-year-old man living in Tokyo by himself said, "Today's Japan is a cold and lonely place. Everything is electronic. Nothing is human. Even my daughters have more regard for their kitchen appliances than they do for their own father." When I look more deeply at all of my positive feelings about being promoted to that status of honorable raisinette, I have to admit that I too may be doing some airbrushing. The reality of my old age, will be that I will not have any children around me. I only have one sibling, and he is at a great distance from me. Preston is 15 years older than I am, and so I will probably be alone. I wonder, too, about my health and my financial condition. I try not to worry, but those fears do creep up on me. But you know what my greatest fear is of old age? My greatest fear is that I will be miserable, that I will be depressed or angry. To come to terms with old age, we need to see it for what it is and to use our understanding of it to live in ways that move us toward more fulfillment and gratitude rather than feeling like we have been defeated by life and trying and not knowing how to set things straight. The truth is that old age is a time of diminishment in our lives. That's just the way it is. But it is a diminishment, it's a time of diminishment in our outer lives. Outwardly, we are wasting away, writes Paul in his letter to the Corinthians. The outward realm is the realm of the material, the body, our work, our possessions, even our families. This is where we focus so much of our attention, especially when we're young. And even in middle age, we don't really anticipate the diminishment of life. When Gloria Steinem was 50, she's now 74 years old, she said this about middle age. I had never thought about or lived with the surprising, upsetting, implacable, and irrevocable mystery of aging. Instead, I had been behaving as if the long plateau of an activist middle life went on forever. I know what she means. I know exactly how this feels. I feel more comfortable at 44 than I did at age 24. And I often feel like the way I am now, the way I feel now, could just go on forever and ever and ever. Now, if we are graced by a particular wisdom, we may be able to wake up and move out of this condition of denial. For many of us, though, something jarring really has to happen to let us know that we have come to the edge of that plateau of middle life. In Gloria Steinem's life, that something was cancer. Now, for someone else, it could be something less dramatic, but still symbolic of the evidence of deterioration, as Fleur Adcock noticed in the poem this morning. My hair will grow gray in any case. My nails chip and flake. My waist thicken, and the years work all their usual changes. I caught a little snippet of an infomercial the other day. The announcer was selling a hair care product, and she said very seriously, "It takes courage to try a new hair care product." After all, your hair is a part of who you are. And I screamed at her. I said, "No, no. Your hair is not a part of who you are. Your hair can be an expression of your personality. It can be a medium for your creativity and whimsy. But no, it is not a part of who you are." The culture we live in is not helping us to age very well. Some people find the edge of that plateau of middle life when all of the structures that gave meaning and purpose to their lives begin to fall away. Close relatives and friends begin to die. Retirement brings the loss of influence and control. All the organizations and institutions and cultural patterns that you knew growing up all fade into history. Now, how jarring these diminishments of our outer lives turn out to be has a great deal to do with how we have attended to or how we have ignored our spiritual lives, our inner lives. Now, you may have been holding very lightly all the material entanglements that we collect along the way. You may have been cultivating this differentiation between your deep self, the inner, and that provisional personality that we use to navigate the world, that's the outer. You may have been cultivating that differentiation all your life. And if so, then old age can be a time when that cultivation is bearing fruit. It can be a time of letting some of those seemingly serious business affairs of the outer life recede, and its relative importance becomes clearer with maturity. Outwardly, we are wasting away, yet inwardly, we are being renewed day by day. On the other hand, if you have remained firmly identified with your business card identity, your mental sharpness, even your role as husband or wife, mother, son, then old age may be a steeper path. And if you have gotten all balled up in that cultural nonsense of your hair being a part of who you are, then it may be very steep indeed. When those dead strands of cellulose that the commercials try to sell off as healthy hair start to change and gray and fall out because of chemotherapy or heredity, old age will be a time of great anxiety for you. One day, John Quincy Adams, when he was well past the usual span of life, he met a young friend on the streets, and the young friend asked, "Well, how is John Quincy Adams today?" And Adams replied, "John Quincy Adams is very well, thank you. But the house he lives in is sadly dilapidated." It is tottering on its foundations. The walls are badly shattered, and the roof is worn. The building trembles with every wind, and I think that John Quincy Adams will have to move out soon. But he himself is very well, thank you. This little encounter reminds me of the first time I ever had a chance to touch the body of a person who had recently died. I was a hospital chaplain, and the morgue was in a dark, dingy place in the basement. One of my jobs was to make sure that the body looked okay for the family when they arrived. I had to hold my hands firmly on the eyelids so they would stay closed during the visit. Standing there, touching the cold, dry skin made it so vivid for me that this was not the person. This was not the father. This was not the husband. This was an empty structure that had completed its task valiantly, carrying the energy, the life force that the person had been. I think Adams knew the difference between who he was and what the edifice of his body really was, a piece of biological carpentry that had served him well and would collapse soon. He could talk about it with equanimity and even humor. He had found what it was that was most valuable in himself. Having made that inward journey, John Quincy Adams could report that John Quincy Adams was very well, thank you. It seems that he had found a fine sense of appreciation and humility and gratitude for the preciousness of every day. Now, this doesn't mean that Adams had grown indifferent about his physical house. Surely he did what he could to keep it patched up and secure. And he certainly didn't turn away from the outer world as unimportant. But he had the insight to see that the diminishment of all the outer realities is a graceful stepping aside of lesser things to let greater things come more fully into his life. Old age offers us even more if we seize the opportunity to share our experiences of it with those who are coming along behind us. It's like old badger and little badger. This spiritual community, because we span the ages, is just the place for that kind of sharing. Imagine what our world would be like if in the middle of that middle age plateau, not at the end of it, but at the middle of it, or even in youth, people started waking up to the true impermanent nature of all of those outward identities and started to cultivate the inner radiance that is within all of us. Imagine the hurt we would not inflict on our families and on the earth. The poet Rainer Maria Rilke once described the purpose of poetry as being to confirm confidence toward death out of the deepest delights and glories of life. To confirm the confidence toward death out of the deepest delights and glories of life. To make death, who was never a stranger, to make death more distinct and palpable again as the silent, knowing participant in everything alive. Even, and especially, as we grow ancient and creaking, even and especially as death becomes palpably close and real, this keen aliveness can be with us if we seek out the deepest delights and glories that come with that inward spiritual journey. Even and especially in old age, we can write this kind of poetry with the way we live for all to read. May it be so.